It is a privilege to be here today, passing on to you not only the teachings of my great teacher, Shunryu Suzuki Roshi, but by passing on the meaning of his teaching, giving meaning to the practice of all of the great Buddhist ancestors, all the way back to Shakyamuni Buddha. So today we'll complete the discussion of offering the first of the Bodhisattva four embracing actions. And beginning with Dogen's words, again, you've heard these. When the way is entrusted to the way, we attain the way. When we attain the way unfailingly continues to be entrusted to the way. When material things are treasured, these treasures actually become dana. We offer ourselves to ourselves, and we offer others to others. The karma of giving pervades the heavens above and our human world alike. It even reaches the realm of those sages who have attained the fruits of realization. Whether we give or receive, we connect ourselves with all beings throughout the world. And Okumura Roshi comments, and I just find this so profound. When the way is entrusted to the way, the person refrains from making judgments and controlling all things according to his personal view and system of values. This is what we do in Zazen by letting go of thought. When we try not to deal with things based on our own ideas and desires, the reality of all things as they are is made manifest. This is the same as the 4-year-old girl saying, "I'm sorry, I have nothing to offer." When we practice with an empty hand, the way manifests itself. Only with an awareness of the reality that we have nothing to offer, or even more radically, that there is nothing to grasp as me, can we practice dana as a paramita. Regarding when material things are treasured, these treasures actually become dana. We offer ourselves to ourselves, and we offer others to others. It means when we don't deal with things according to our personal desires and try not to use things only for fulfilling these desires, all things appear as they are. Otherwise, we only see the image created in our mind by our own conditioned thoughts and cravings. That realm of letting go of thoughts and desires is the common ground of interdependent origination in which all things are sustaining each other. Simply being a knot in the network of interdependence is already an offering. So just being alive is an offering. We're all little knots in this network of interdependence. And just being that knot is an offering. So we don't have to do anything, really. It's the non-doing. We offer ourselves to ourselves and we offer others to others means we entrust ourselves to ourselves and we entrust others to others. So we try not to control. Like we can just let others do what they think is best. as they will. And this is what we do in Zazen. In Zazen, the self settles down with the self and others become who they are. It's much different from our usual way of seeing ourselves with greed and hate and anger. Zazen allows us to give up our usual struggle between who we are and who we want to be. And it frees us from our expectations of how others should behave. We have so many ideas about that. And we can just drop it. And then Dogen again, the karma of giving pervades the heavens above and our human world alike. It even reaches the realm of those sages who have attained the fruits of realization. Whether we give or receive, we connect ourselves with all beings throughout the world. And so this means each action we perform as a practice of the Bodhisattva vows is connected to everything in the past and the future. Therefore, even our small offerings, given with sincere hearts, have connections to all beings. So whether giving or receiving, by letting go of egocentricity and being giving and receiving, being, we are this thing, being giving, and it's not a thing, it's an action. We go beyond the separation of self and all other beings. We then actively participate in the network of interdependent origination. So then Dogen continues. The Buddha said, when a person who practices dana comes into an assembly, other people watch that person with admiration. We should know that the mind of such a person quietly reaches others. Even if we offer just one word or verse of Dharma, it will become a seed of goodness in this lifetime and in other lives to come. Even if we give humble things, a single penny or a stalk of grass, we plant a root of goodness in this and other ages. Dharma can be a material treasure, and a material treasure can be Dharma. This depends entirely upon the giver's vow and wish. So Dogen Zenji is saying, associating with a good person is like walking through mist and dew. Though you will not become drenched, gradually your robes will become damp. So here he's talking about this thing called perfuming. He's saying that if we keep practicing the four embracing actions, we become influenced by these actions and become damp with the moisture of our own actions, our own activities, as well as the activities of others, perfume self and other. And in this way, our lives and the world evolve together. Even if we offer just one word or verse of Dharma, it will become a seed of goodness in this lifetime and in lives to come. Even if we give humble things, a single penny or a stalk of grass, we plant a root of goodness in this and other ages. So last week, there was a really interesting comment that came in right after the talk was over. And this person said, an easy way to experience pure offering is through our breathing, in which we are offering carbon dioxide to the plants. And it's silly to think of being greedy with our carbon dioxide. And they added, it's just a thought, but you know, it's a great thought. And I'm thinking, even a smile can be helpful, Donna. For example, Okamura Roshi tells this story. This is about himself. When I was practicing at Pioneer Valley Zendo and working in the evening at a tofu shop in a nearby town, since I didn't have a driver's license, I had to sleep at the shop after work rather than going back to the Zendo. Because it was the warmest spot in the shop, I slept next to the furnace on a pile of bags containing soybeans. This spot was warm, but noisy, and consequently, I could not sleep well. One cold winter morning, I stopped for a cup of coffee before hitchhiking back to the Zendo. The waitress at the coffee shop, a woman in her 60s, looked at my face as she served me coffee and said, "Smile, it's a beautiful day." For a while, I did not understand why she had said such a thing. I just said, "Thank you." Later, because of the waitress's words, I noticed that although it was very cold, it really was a beautiful day. When I started to walk after having the coffee, I thought, when she looked at my face, she thought I was desperate. Now I feel that her words were one of the greatest offerings of Donna that I ever received. When I am having a hard time and forget to smile, I remember the kind words of that waitress. And along the same lines is Dogen's poem called Original Face. We've heard this before, but it's very short. In spring, the cherry blossoms. In summer, the cuckoo song. In autumn, the moon shining. In winter, the frozen snow. How pure and clear are the seasons. And I think it explains what Dogen meant when he said, trusting flowers to the wind and trusting birds to the season may also be a meritorious act of Dana. Just living together with all beings without trying to possess them is the meritorious action of Dana. And then amazingly, Suzuki Roshi has the following to say about God. Believe it or not, this is Suzuki Roshi on God and creation and the perfect idea of giving. I didn't even know Roshi said anything about God, but he did. And it's just the short little speech. According to Christianity, every existence in nature is something which was created for or given to us by God. This is the perfect idea of giving, says Suzuki Roshi. But if you think that God created man and that you are somehow separate from God, you are liable to think that you have the ability to create something separate, something not given by him. For instance, we create airplanes and highways. And when we repeat, "I create, I create, I create," soon we forget who is actually the I which creates the various things. We soon forget about God. This is the danger of human culture. Actually, to create with the big I is to give. We cannot create and own with what we create for ourselves, since everything was created by God. This point should not be forgotten. But because we do forget who is doing the creating and the reason for the creation, we become attached to the material or exchange value. This has no value in comparison to the absolute value of something as God's creation. Even though something has no material value or relative value to any small I, it has absolute value in itself. Not to be attached to something is to be aware of its absolute value. Everything you do should be based on such an awareness and not on material or self-centered ideas of value. Then whatever you do is true giving, is dana prajna paramita. So then back to Dogen, the Buddha said, one may offer a gift to oneself and use one's own gift. Even more, one could pass it on to one's parents, wife, and children. Therefore, we should know that giving to ourselves is a kind of giving. To give to parents, wife, and children is also an offering. And Okamura Roshi says, initially, I had difficulty understanding what Dogen was saying here. But on December 20th, 1975, I came to the U.S. for the first time with my Dharma brother and a few American friends. I was 26 years old. We stayed with our friend John in Los Angeles, and then Michael, another friend, came to pick us up and take us to San Francisco. On our way, we stopped in Santa Barbara to visit another friend, Paul, who had practiced at Antaiji, which is Uchiyama Roshi's temple. And then we went to UC Santa Barbara on New Year's Eve. We talked with Paul and his roommates regarding our trip to Massachusetts. A Dharma brother who had gone to Massachusetts 1 year before had bought a piece of wooded land in the woods in the western part of the state, intending to build a zendo. Speaking among ourselves, we noted that there was nothing there other than a small house built by practitioners the previous summer. It was going to take a lot of work to establish a practice center. When he heard us, Michael gave me a pair of working boots. He said, "I'm happy if these boots are useful to you." The pair of boots did fit me quite well. My English was very poor, so I could only say thank you and receive his offerings. At the same time, I was uncomfortable. I appreciated his kindness and generosity to a stranger who had come from Japan. But some deeper part of my mind said, I don't want to receive it. I didn't really understand what this feeling was. The next day was New Year's Day, 1976. Taking a walk by myself early in the morning along the nearby streets that had big, beautiful trees on both sides, I tried to figure out what that feeling was. The sky was so blue, a color that was rare in Japan. After a while, I found that the feeling had something to do with the teaching of Sawaki Roshi. Gaining is delusion. Losing is enlightenment. My teacher, Uchiyama Roshi, retired from Antaiji in the winter of 1975. Right before he left the temple, he gave his last lecture as the abbot, in which he talked on 7 points he kept in mind in order to educate his disciples and maintain sincere practice while he was the abbot. He wished that his disciples would observe these points and continue his vow in our activities. The third of those 7 points was, Zazen must work concretely in our daily lives as 2 practices, vow and repentance, as 3 minds, magnanimous mind, nurturing mind, and joyful mind, and as the realization of the saying, gaining is delusion, losing is enlightenment. Uchiyama Roshi talked about the saying as an essential point of practice based on Buddha Dharma. And so Okamura Roshi quotes Uchiyama. This is Uchiyama Roshi, the few words of his. To recognize true Zazen, we have to look at our practice from an absolute perspective. If you are caught up in one of the limited kinds of Zen of the six realms, you can no longer see the essential point of Buddha Dharma. And what is that? As I said before, Buddhism teaches impermanence and the quality of non-ego. Letting go and opening the hand of thought is the foundation of Zen based on the Buddha Dharma. The saying, gaining is delusion, losing is enlightenment, has very practical value. In our ordinary human life, we are always trying to fulfill our desires. We're satisfied only when all of our desires are met. In Buddhism, though, it's just the opposite. It is important for us to leave our desires alone without trying to fulfill them. If we push this one step further, gaining is delusion, losing is enlightenment, we're talking about active participation in loss. Let me be clear that this is again Uchiyama Roshi. Let me be clear that I am not saying losing in it is important, so go help people out by collecting what you can from them. That just makes you the someone who gains. Rather, apply this saying just to yourself and give something up. For breaking the ego's grip, nothing is more effective than giving something up. And I'm thinking that's the quote. Isn't that what they do in Lent? I could be wrong, but I think that's what they do. Give something up. It's interesting that's what Uchiyama Roshi says is nothing more effective in breaking the ego's grip than giving something up. So originally this saying was Sawaki Roshi's. So the lineage goes, Sawaki Roshi was Uchiyama Roshi's teacher, and Uchiyama was Okamura Roshi's teacher. So those three. So Sawaki Roshi's expression was based on Dogen's phrase, Musho Toku, which means no gaining. So Dogen is the one that said no gaining. Musho Toku originates in the Mahayana teaching of emptiness of subject and object. So there's no one to gain and nothing to be gained. So Dogen, with his logical mind, said, you know, no gain Zen. But in the Heart Sutra, we find the expression, there is neither ignorance nor extinction of ignorance, neither old age and death, nor extinction of old age and death, no suffering, no cause, no cessation, no path, no knowledge, and no attainment. With nothing to attain, Musho Toku, a bodhisattva relies on prajnaparamita, and thus the mind is without hindrance. But Uchiyama Roshi said that someone criticized Sawaki Roshi, saying, neither gaining nor losing, neither enlightenment nor delusion, neither one of those is in accord with Buddha Dharma. Gaining is delusion and losing is enlightenment is still incomplete, this person said. And so in reply, Uchiyama Roshi said, because we have a tendency to gain something desirable and not to lose anything we possess, we need to actively participate in not to gain and to lose. So because our proclivity is so much to gain and to not lose anything, we need to actively participate in the opposite. And Okamura Roshi says, This was a very important teaching for me. Since from the beginning, I studied and practiced following Sawaki Roshi and Uchiyama Roshi's teaching. So the teaching of gaining is delusion and losing is enlightenment is about being free from ego-centered mind. that is always calculating how much can we gain and how much are we going to lose. When what's coming in is larger than what's going out, we think our lives are in good shape. It's very difficult for us to be free from this kind of basic desire for gaining, even when we practice the Buddha Dharma. We always ask, what can I get from this? Our expectation from Buddhist practice is usually so-called enlightenment. We practice as if we can expect some kind of benefit that makes us better or makes our lives easier and more comfortable. Basic Mahayana teachings of egolessness and no gaining warn against this kind of mental framework. But when we try to study and apply it, we have a rather complicated problem. Because gaining is delusion, I don't want to gain. Because losing is enlightenment, I want to lose. When I'm offered something from others, or when I don't have anything to offer myself, I feel small and guilty. When I can offer something, I feel good. When we understand this teaching in this way, we simply create another standard to measure gaining and losing. We are still in the framework of gaining and losing. That is what was happening in my mind on the New Year's Day of 1976. I did not want to gain because gaining was losing. At that time, I made up my mind to receive the working boots with gratitude and use them not for the sake of my desire, but for the sake of Dharma. After arriving at Pioneer Valley Zendo, I put on the pair of working boots when I worked on cutting trees, clearing land to make a vegetable garden, chopping wood to make firewood, etc. The pair of working boots was really helpful, both in the summer and winter. They protected my feet. People taught me how to take care of the leather. The pair of boots became a very good friend. And after 2 years of hard work in the woods of Western Massachusetts, they were completely broken. In colloquial Japanese, we say that they had become Buddha. I love that. When something's just completely destroyed, you know, then it's become Buddha. So in the fascicle of Shobo Genzo, well, we're studying the fascicle Shishobo, but in the fascicle called Continuous Practice, Dogen wrote, "Now that we today have become people who see and hear the true Dharma, we should unfailingly repay our debt of gratitude to the second ancestor." The second ancestor is Huike, the one who stood in the snow all night. You remember him? Just to get Bodhidharma to admit him to his presence, Huike stood all night in the northern Japan snow. So right now Dogen is saying, we owe him, Huike, a deep debt of gratitude. Extraneous methods of repayment will not do. Bodies and lives are not sufficient, and nations and cities are not important. Nations and cities can be plundered by others and bequeathed to relatives and children. Bodies and lives can be given over to impermanence. They can be committed to a lord or entrusted to false ways. Therefore, to intend to repay our gratitude through such means is not the way. Simply to maintain the practice day by day, only this is the right way to repay our gratitude. The principle here is to maintain the practice so that the life of every day is not neglected and wasted on private pursuits. For what reason? Because this life of ours is a blessing left over from past maintenance of the practice. It is a great favor bestowed by maintenance of the practice. which we should hasten to repay by maintenance of the practice. But I'd like to end here, however, with a caveat. I want you to be really clear about that bodhisattva practice is not a way of self-sacrifice. So after everything I've just said, I want you to be really understand it's a middle way. The goal of our practice is to find a way that we and other beings can live together without causing suffering to each other. That's all. That's what Buddhist practice is about. And this is the middle way between pursuing only one's interests and sacrificing oneself. Those two extremes. So offering is a practice, what we're doing now, the first of the four embracing actions, offering, that is a practice of not disturbing the movement of all beings in the network in which we and our families are included. So it's really a very peaceful practice, a deeply peaceful practice of non-disturbance of all other beings by simply using dana in the sense of dana as a paramita, which I'm just trying to explain what that is. So here are some of the most important points about the paramita of offering, which includes the talk today and last week. And there's 5 points. First, when we try not to deal with all things based on our own ideas and desires, the reality of all things as they are is made manifest. So basically, not to tinker. Don't tinker with anything, including yourself. And secondly, because we all have a tendency to gain something desirable and not to lose anything we possess, we need to actively participate our practice not to gain and to lose, which means offer. Thirdly, simply to maintain the practice day by day, only this is the right way to repay our gratitude. The principle here is to maintain the practice so that the life of every day is not neglected and not wasted on private pursuits. For what reason? Because this life of ours is a blessing left over from past maintenance of the practice. It is a great favor bestowed by maintenance of the practice, which we should hasten to repay by maintenance of the practice on a daily basis. And the fourth point, this is, I think, mainly from last week. To be greedy means to make a wall between ourselves and other beings, and trying to make desirable things our possessions and to keep them inside the wall and undesirable things outside the wall. This is done by the three poisonous minds, greed, hate or anger, and ignorance. To be free from these three poisonous minds, especially greed, is the actual practice of offering as a paramita. Remember, not to be greedy is what offering is. Within this network, each one of us is included. Unless we take good care of ourselves and our family, we cannot help others. This is why Dogen Zenji quotes the Buddha saying, "One may offer a gift to oneself and use one's own gift. Even more, one can pass it to one's parents, wife, and children. And fifth, last, when we don't deal with things according to our personal desires and try not to use things only for fulfilling these desires, all things can appear as they are. Otherwise, we only see the image created in our minds by our own conditioned thoughts and cravings. That realm of letting go of thoughts and desires is the common ground of interdependent origination, in which all things are sustaining each other, simply being a knot in the network of interdependence is already an offering. Well, so all of this is really circling around a cluster of ideas. And for your reflection during the week, here are four major ideas contained in this discussion of offering. And each of them is as difficult to enact as it is powerful as a teaching. So please choose one. So study the four and choose one and think of one change that you could make right now so that your life would be with that teaching more intimately. I'm suggesting that you write your idea down and pay attention to how it goes. Follow it. Write your idea down for change of one of these four and track it. Track how it goes. In this way, you'll uncover your present obstacles, thereby beginning the actual process of making these actions part of your own life and practice as a Zen Buddhist. So I'm suggesting to pick one of these four things and think of one thing you could do to work on whichever one you choose, and then try to start doing that thing and track how you do with that. So the first one is the only way we can repay a debt of gratitude is to live an unselfish way and try to be helpful to other people we encounter. That is, we offer the same support as we received to others. In the case of Buddhist practitioners, we practice Buddha Dharma for the sake of Buddha Dharma. This is what Dogen Zenji means when he says, the principle here is to maintain the practice so that the life of every day is not neglected and not wasted in private pursuits. So that's one thing we can do. Try to live unselfishly and to help others. The second way is because we all have a tendency to gain something desirable and not to lose anything we possess, we need to actively participate in and actively practice not to gain and to lose instead. So that's the second one. The third one is by either giving or receiving, by letting go of egocentricity and being giving or receiving, we go beyond the separation of self and all other beings. We then actively participate in the network of interdependent origination. That's the third one. And then the fourth one. We offer ourselves to ourselves and we offer others to others means we entrust ourselves to ourselves and entrust others to others. We refrain even from controlling ourselves as well as others. This is what we do in Zazen. In Zazen, the self settles down within the self and others become as they are. This is much different from our usual way of seeing ourselves with greed and anger or hatred. Zazen allows us to give up our usual struggle between who we are and who we want to be, and it frees us from our expectations of how others should behave. I wonder if there are any questions, and feel free to ask questions from the previous talks. Again, I said this last week too, because this whole series is really one, it's really one thing, Zazen in action.
Yes, Gail, so we have a question here. I've heard you say this before, we refrain even from controlling ourselves as well as others. And it baffles me completely. How do we try to not control ourselves? Wouldn't we become barbarians?
Yes, I'm sure we would. However, we're also practicing Zazen. And Zazen allows us completely to become ourselves. And at the same time, it allows others to become others. So it's an example to us of how not to tinker. Instead, it's how to respect both ourselves and others. And actually, you'll become much more interesting to yourself in this way. You'll become curious. I wonder what will happen if I just do nothing and just watch. But the real truth is that no matter how hard we try, we don't have any control anyway. We actually don't have any control. Only all beings have control over all beings. So trying to control ourselves is fruitless anyway. Reb actually says, every morning I come to the Zendo and I sit and I try to be still, but I'm completely unable to make myself sit still by myself. Only all beings, he says this, only all beings together, all beings in the universe are completely capable of making me sit still, which they do. But I by myself, it's futile. It's a futile effort to make myself sit still. And so he's very concrete about this teaching of by ourselves, we're sort of useless because we're all always a part of this interconnected Indra's net. It's an image, but it's a good one. We're just this knot on Indra's net. And so we're just intricately connected with everything. And it's the net that keeps us operating how we are. And by ourselves, we're just kind of like nothing in terms of powerful. So you say, well, wouldn't we become barbarians? But the truth is we can't control anything anyway. It's a delusion. And so the best thing is to realize that and sit, practice Zazen, which we have available to us. And in that, we actually become Zazen. That's what I'm finding. It's like we become who we are, which is Zazen. One realizes that over time, I think. Thank you for asking.
Thank you, Gail. The second question that we have is, what does it mean being giving or receiving? Can we be an action? I thought we do actions.
There's a secret here. And the secret is our egocentricity. So we do actions, but we actually are, the bigger truth is that we are our actions. We become our actions, just like I was saying a second ago. We become Zazen. And when you let go of yourself, your generous behavior becomes who you are. When you hold on to yourself and do, so the doing is, I am giving you this thing. So do you see the duality there? I am giving you this thing. It's all over the place. But being, giving, and receiving is, we let go of our egocentricity and our dualistic thinking, and pure giving and receiving is the result of that. There's just a kind of purity of mind. And then there's just one stream of interconnected beingness. And it's almost like giving and receiving disappears. Or even that just disappears. I hope this is clear. It's almost like everything boils down to the same thing, which is this true understanding of the interconnected nature of our reality. And it's not something we can think our ways into. We have to kind of get it, quotes around get, just like, oh, just suddenly understand. But Zazen is the way toward that. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. The next one we have is, can you explain what does it mean, beneficial actions never regress?
Yes. I think that's one that comes from an expression from last week's talk that I just love. And I want to give you an example of something that's happening for me right now regarding that expression. I think you all know that because we're taking, the reason you all know is I've announced that we won't be having meetings at all in January because I'll be attending a retreat at Green Gulch Farm, a Zen practice intensive with Reb, my teacher. And I'm a little curious about what's going to happen in the cold and wet weather. And so shortly ago, in kind of cleaning up my office here with a year end, the year is coming to an end, so I'm doing a kind of year end cleaning, I came across this prayer that I used to say when I was practicing Tibetan Buddhism. And it's a prayer that was blessed by a Rinpoche who is closely related to the Dalai Lama in that every other lifetime, each is the other's teacher. And so one lifetime, the Dalai Lama is this person's teacher. And the next lifetime, he's the Dalai Lama's teacher. So this lifetime right now, the Dalai Lama is his teacher. And he's an adult, and he blessed this prayer that I used to say every day as a Tibetan Buddhist practitioner. And it blesses, the blessing is to make auspicious, to bring auspicious results to any endeavor. So to bring auspicious results to any endeavor. So I'm here worried about, you know, how I'm going to do in the cold. And I come upon this prayer about blessing to create auspicious results to any endeavor. And I'm thinking, well, I should start saying this prayer again. And then I think, well, beneficial actions never regress. So when I used to say this prayer, certainly it was a beneficial action. And so all of the benefit of having said that prayer is still in place because beneficial actions never regress. And so if I begin to say it again, I'm just building on all of the value that accrued from the years in which I did say it as a Tibetan Buddhist practitioner. So just because I forgot about it completely since that, you know, between then and returning to Zen as my practice, doesn't matter. There's still the beneficial actions never regress. So there's that huge foundation there of those years of saying this prayer to create auspicious results in any endeavor. And I have an upcoming endeavor here in January, and so I'm dutifully saying this prayer every day to create auspicious results. And I'll report back in February when I see you again how auspicious it was. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. We just got a comment also. The comment says that lately I've been trying to better myself by gaining more education in my chosen field, but there has been a greedy quality to my efforts that I couldn't quite put my finger on. When you said, do not build a wall between yourself and others, it clicked for me. I've been trying to distinguish myself, to set myself apart from others through my education. The spirit of generosity has been lost. I want to find it again.
Oh, thank you so much for that. I just feel so validated just that you've actually got that from these talks, which is there in the talks, but you know, we can, things can go in one ear and out another, as I well know. And that's really exactly the point. That's exactly the point. And you're not alone in losing generosity. It's very easy. We're very, from, you know, birth and before, we're attached to this body and mind. We're just very attached. And to let go of that attachment and remember, there's something else there. And I think we need to be adults to do that too. Like, I always distinguish adults from children by the ability to the awareness of the effect of your behavior on others, which is a kind of generosity, to give others the thoughtfulness of if I do that, well, then it will affect this person in such and such a way. That's a kind of generous thought. And children aren't capable of that. So when we become adults, we become capable of that. And many adults are still children because they don't do it anyway, even though they're adults. So that generosity that's very excellent that you're thinking this way now. And it won't interfere with your education. You can still get as much education as you want, but it will be with a different spirit. And the greediness, I know you've heard again and again, greed, hate, and delusion. They're called the three poisons for good reason. They just poison everything. And we don't need them anyway. So thank you so much for that comment.
Thank you, Gail. Another one that we have is, how can we transform our consciousness and go beyond this sense of separation from other human beings?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because, you know, it can seem like, well, how do we do that anyway? And I'll give you two examples. Well, Okamura Roshi gives the example of hitchhiking, because as I just read to you, he didn't have a driver's license in America. And so he had to hitchhike everywhere. And he never, in all of his hitchhiking back and forth across the whole country, he never had to, he was always given meals and a place to sleep, just because of people's generosity toward him, because he had Buddhist robes on and people were just generous. And that generosity, just hearing that story gives us a sense of the oneness of and the non-separation of human beings. And I want to tell you another story the other day. So even if we don't have it happen to us, even if we see it happen to someone else, it brings that same feeling of warmth and oneness of all beings. The other day, I was driving away from Trader Joe's in Emeryville, and I saw this woman start running toward a bus that was pretty far away. And I was thinking to myself, you know, good luck, honey. I really didn't think she'd make this bus. And sure enough, the bus pulled away, but then it slowed down and stopped and opened its doors just for her. And I was so happy. I was so happy to see this. It was like, it just solidified, things like that just solidify your experience of the oneness of you know, the truth of our interconnectedness with all beings. It just like, I think I was as happy as she was, honestly, when this bus driver stopped. And so there it is, you know, I'm here. We're just all one Indra's net. Thank you. I'm sure you've noticed whenever there's an act of kindness by a stranger, we get this feeling. So I need to stop and thank you for being here, and thank the people who are here during the week for being there, and thank my team, Sahar and Brian and Brendan, for helping make this possible. And to remind you that next week we will not be meeting because of Thanksgiving on Thursday. People like to enjoy the whole weekend, but we will be meeting the first three weekends in December, finishing up this series, the last three of the four Bodhisattva embracing actions. I hope you have a good holiday. Thank you. Bye-bye.